John, I'm going to turn to you first. If you would set the stage for us, it's about 1958, 1959. Mark Rothko has just been commissioned to paint a high-profile series of paintings for a high-end New York restaurant, the Four Seasons.
Right.
And although he's accepted the commission, as the play opens, he's angry, he's frustrated. Why is that?
This commission really sort of tossed him into doubts and misgivings about his values as an artist. It became a crisis, a complete sort of crisis of creativity. His artistic values were questioned. I suppose the way we could say it most simply is that he, for so long, had really railed against commercialism. And in this case, he had accepted a commission that was a very expensive one. I think he received something like $35,000, right, for this commission. That's about $2 million in today's currency. So this sort of thrust him into a dilemma. And I think, you know, that was a contributing source to his anger.
Well, as you mentioned, Red is the kind of work that explores this boundary between art and commerce, that age-old debate over selling out. As someone, well, three of you actually, that are involved in this process, not only are you putting on the play, and that's art, but you're also hoping to sell tickets, and that's commerce. How well do you think, and John, we'll start with you, how well do you think that Red explores that crossroads between art and making money?
It is certainly one of the debates of the play. And I don't know how much of the plot I want to give away, because there is a resolution in the play in Rothko's mind, and in the real Rothko, there was a dramatic resolution about this. So I think it explores it intensely, this need to create work and to receive some money. But do we sell out? Do we participate in the commercialism that so often can just absolutely eviscerate high art? It's a question.
Michael, you are the man of the hour. You're playing Rothko. How do you think the play explores that issue?
Well, I think so often with commerce comes recognition, and with recognition, one's career can build. And then you fall onto that slippery slope, which is exactly what happened with Mark Rothko. He wanted all of his work to be for the common people, and yet the more successful he became, one of the dilemmas that occurred there was that the value of his work continually climbed. And the average person could no longer afford to get a hold of a Mark Rothko painting. This was a dilemma for him, and yet he railed at the very people that were paying him money. And this was a constant dilemma in his battle, the back and forth, the yin and yang of how am I true to myself and to my work and yet not sell out, which is the very heart, I think, of the argument of Logan's play.
Matt Leisey, we'll turn to you for a moment. There's the other character in the play, Ken. Is a fictional character. He's an assistant, but he's also an invention of the playwright, John Logan. So what role does Ken serve? I think he's a sounding board. He's sort of somebody to argue back and forth with Rothko, but he may also be a proxy for the audience's questions.
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, Rothko hires this guy Ken to be his assistant in the studio to stretch the canvases, to build the frames, to prime the canvases also. And but I think he's used in the play as just to represent the new wave of artists, the new generation. And that's definitely like a big theme of the play. It's just like, well, Rothko represents, well, he wouldn't like to be labeled this, but like an abstract expressionist painter. And I represent the pop art, the new wave of artists. And
the young painters.
The young painters, yes.
On the scene, yeah.
But Mark Rothko, of course, is not a fictional character. He's a character, if we may say, based on a real person. And Michael, what are the challenges of playing a character based on a real person? Obviously, there are some liberties that you can take in interpretation and some that you can't because they'd be outside of the character. How do you tread that line?
It's huge. It's a big dilemma anytime you're playing someone, particularly of this stature, a real-life person. From my own personal standpoint, I do a lot of research ahead of time. I actually went to London prior to this and went to the Tate Modern and took in all of the Seagram's paintings that he was commissioned to do. And I wanted to get a feel for the man, not actually try to do an imitation of the man or a caricature of the man, but I understand completely who he is and where he was coming from in that time and place. So you do all of that work, and then you just kind of let that subside and you bring your own your own instincts, your own aesthetic to it. You certainly collaborate with great people that we've got here at the table, and you move forward from there. That's been the most exciting thing. I think having done all that work, knowing that work is there from a preliminary standpoint, and then jumping into Logan's text, which is really speaks for itself and is really quite wonderful.
You know, I mentioned to these guys the first day of rehearsal that I had the opinion that Logan had done a sketch of Rothko. He could not possibly have encompassed the totality of that man in a 90-minute show. So my sense, and it's much like what Michael has just said, my sense has been that we've had to look into the works about Rothko, the biographies, many of the interesting books that we've read, to sort of find all of the subterranean aspects of this man and fill the sketch in with that. And so that's been part of our process.
And not turn it into a dry dissertation or a lecture.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we really want to avoid
here. Yeah, so by looking at the biographies, reading the biographies of Mark Rothko, we have really found, I think, the human being, you know. So that very much keeps it from being a sort of lecture about Mark Rothko and his works.
All three of you, of course, are artists, not on canvas, but on the stage. But I'm curious about plays like this one that depict the creation of art, in part because I think they try to communicate the creative process, and I think all three of you could probably attest that's a hard thing to explain sometimes. So if that's the case, what do we learn about the creative process by watching this play, Michael?
Well, so often when you're watching films and it's about the creative process, we'll see a lot of aspects of an artist's life, whether it's ballet, jazz, drama, painter, what have you, and then you don't actually see the muse at work. And what is so wonderful about this play, and this isn't really giving anything away, there's a moment where the two of them get together and they actually prime a canvas. And it's glorious. We've got music and we've got this raw piece of cloth up
canvas.
There, and we just have at it. This is so rare in a play. So often it's talked about or there's an innuendo about what the art is, but you don't actually get to see it happen on stage. And this is one of the magic moments, I think, that Logan has captured and mm-hmm. that the three of us, and particularly Matt and I, we just kind of get to go wild there. And that's really glorious.
Yeah, it is glorious. And this is one of the novel aspects of this play. John Logan calls it a work play because the actors on stage do so many of the daily tasks of the artist, like priming the canvas, stretching canvases, that sort of thing.
We have no technicians in the show on stage, no stage hands. We do everything, which in itself, it's a real kitchen realism.
Matt, what do you think? What does it say about the creative process, this play?
Well, I think what's so interesting about this play is that, I mean, just like Michael was saying, you see all of this stuff happening but you see the moment of inspiration, which for Rothko, I mean, he would put music on and that would kind of get him into the right place to find the creative impulse to paint. And so I think it's just really cool just to see, because you don't really see that in theater, just that moment when an artist becomes inspired to do their work. And so I think it has a great glimpse into that.
You know, Red is not a play with changing scenes, characters, settings. You just said there's no stagehands involved. It all takes place basically in one room. And in that way, it could be interpreted more as an extended dialogue for 90 minutes between these two characters in one room. What's the challenge of acting in a play that has those kinds of structures to it, Michael?
Well, we don't want to turn it into My Dinner with Andre, but there's actually a fair amount of activity in this 90 minutes. There is a great deal of philosophic conversation that goes back and forth, that banter between two artists. But we've joked about that this could almost be two guys in a garage talking about their motorcycle. It could be a series of individuals talking about any creative process. We just happen to be talking about art. And one of the big things here is, and one of the, I think, brilliant things of the play is the generational differences between the young and the old. And you've established something as an older artist now, and all of a sudden that next generation is coming in. And you put down the previous generation, the Picassos and the Cubists, so no one can paint a Cubist picture today. Now we've got the pop artists coming in, and it's, wait, is my turn over? Am I already being thrown into the you know, into the trash heap. And it's that dilemma that we all go through as we age, when we throw a judgment on the creative process. What's good? What's bad? Are either of those things even relevant? So all of this is mixed in with a lot of activity. So we don't really feel like we're sitting down at a table just talking.
Right.
And that's been part of the excitement of it, how you fix, how you blend in those secondary activities on stage. It's great with Matt. There's a little bit of, we'll be working together. And I think what I see as Rothko is a younger version of Rothko. He sees that next generation, and there's the push and pull there.
What about for the two of you, Michael and Matt, working together? Has that mirrored at all this relationship in the play? Because obviously, Matt, you're young, you're kind of up and coming. Have you felt the same kind of sensation? Can you identify with Kenny?
That's so interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, it's such a treat working with Michael and John, because I am like a younger actor, and these people are seasoned veterans. And
Michael's older than I am.
Right? Okay. but yeah, there is a lot to learn from people who've done more in the past, and just from their experience hearing the stories and just watching them in their craft. And I definitely am a little bit like Ken, and I'm a sponge and soaking in everything I can as a theater artist, as also an artist in the play.
I think Matt navigated that pretty well.
I think he did too. Yeah. Very well said. It's been a great collaborative. Behind the scenes, I didn't know Matt coming in. And within 2 seconds, once Matt and I got together, we clicked.
Often I'll ask people who come in here to talk about theatrical works, I'll ask them, what do you expect the audience to get out of it? But I'm more interested to know, what do you think you'll get out of it, Michael?
Oh, boy, that's a really tough question. I don't want to be too esoteric here, but I just want to do it justice. Want to bring as much of the heart and soul and the humanity of this individual and what he is saying and the importance of that. And I want to just bring everything I can to that. The research that I've done, the collaborative work that we've done together, my own passion and belief in this individual and what he stood for. And I think if we can be as honest with this in its simplest form, that it hopefully will speak for itself.
For me, it's very personal. Mark Rothko is, actually in the play, he's a tad younger than I am, but he represents the older generation. I represent the older generation. I have values in art and in theater that differ considerably from the values of a lot of younger people. I would never compare myself to Mark Rothko, but there are things that he says that have great resonance to me, and particularly the way he addresses Ken. So I hear that very kind of personal voice about an older artist talking to a younger artist, and that stirs me and it moves me, and that's why I think I was so engaged. One of the reasons I was so engaged by this play.
I mean, obviously, we want to do it justice and tell the story. But it's funny, I'm just thinking this right now. I get some great advice from Rothko, kind of as a mentor at the end. And like, it's kind of my turn to make art. It just made me think, I was just like, well, maybe this is a chance to kind of figure out through the course of this play what I want to say as an artist. Like, why am I doing this? What my voice is, just beyond playing characters. And so I don't know, that just is kind of what I'm hoping to get out of this.
Matt Lysy plays Ken, Michael Ellich plays Mark Rothko, John Sipes is the director. The play is called Red, and it's playing at the Clarence Brown Theater. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us today on All Things Considered.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.